If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks for closet Christ. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the divine love and grace of the Supreme Creator. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christ. Our seminar at this time is you, as awakened awareness, have the greatest transformative influence and power on Earth. You, as awakened awareness, have the greatest transformative influence and power on Earth. So just take that in for a moment. Just let that settle. You, as awakened awareness. So let's take a deep breath together and call ourselves forward as that awakened awareness that's always present. And just activate it. Have the intention to activate the awareness in every cell of your being. Just see your whole body come alive, every cell sparkling with divine intelligence, awareness, beauty, and love. And you call yourself forward through your divine line of authority. That's your spiritual upline, your parampara, as it's called in Sanskrit, to which you come forward in a spiritual tradition to do God's work in this world. So you call yourself forward if you are initiated in the mystical traveler, which I am, in that lineage of the spiritual travelers. This is how you call yourself forward. I call myself forward through the office of the Christ, the order of Melchizedek, the mystical traveler preceptor consciousness, through the Lord Jesus the Christ, the Lord Sananda, Lord Maitreya, through all of those travelers that stand in this divine line of authority, through our spiritual director, John Roger, through the present spiritual traveler, John Morton, and through all of us who are travelers in training or have been travelers in previous ages, where we all stand in that divine lineage of authority. And we bring that down as a clear line of golden light right down to the top of our head. And we bring it down through our body. And I always add the lineage of the avatars through Satya Sai Baba, the lineage of the Ashtar Command at the very highest spiritual levels, and whatever occurs to me at the moment, because I carry many, many lineages myself. I carry about 12. But you bring that line of intention, and that's your collective that you work with, your spiritual line of authority. You don't work as a singular unit. You work as a collective, a group soul, you might say, of divine authority. And if you're initiates of Yogananda, you would call yourself forward through that lineage. Or Maharishi, you'd call yourself forward through that lineage. Or if you are also an initiate of the traveler and carry these other lineages, you bring them down as well. So you name and specifically identify where you stand in a spiritual line of authority. You notice we mentioned the office of the Christ. This is not limited to Christianity. The office of the Christ has been held by many throughout time, including Moses, Elijah. And if you look at the patriarchs in the Bible, every single one of those were travelers. They all came down through the divine line of authority that we call the spiritual travelers, including Muhammad. So we're all tucked in there, you see. Nobody can say that they're out there alone operating on their own steam, because that's simply not true. So give some thought, some contemplation about who sponsors your life stream as it comes down as a bestowal of divine consciousness, as a inlet of light and truth, as a means through which the invisible Godhead can have tangible expression and hands into the world. And just consider the power of having that commitment, that connection, that authority that you've been given. John Roger has told those of us that are initiates and ministers that we carry the highest divine authority on earth. Of course, that's not speaking of the ego and the personal self and all of the shenanigans we pull in our lower nature. That's talking about that which is greater, that's within us, than that which is in the world, which would be the personal body and ego presentation. So we all come in with standard issue. We come in with the ego mind, which sees everything in terms of separation. And all of us have the challenge of minimizing the influence that that lower nature has on us. And Sai Baba has this to say: among the qualities that make up a flawless character, love, patience, forbearance, steadfastness, and charity are the highest. These have to be revered and cultivated. And he goes on to say, man must have sama drishti, equal sight. All creation must appear to his eyes as equally auspicious. He must look upon all beings with as much faith and love as he has for himself. For there is nothing evil in creation, not even an iota. Evil appears as such only through faulty vision. Creation gets colored by the nature of the glasses we wear. By itself, it is eternally pure and holy. So when that pure Atmic spirit that we are comes in contact with the mental substance that begins the formation of form in these psychic and material realms, and it appropriates the notion that it's separate and has been cast out of the Edenic state and has met with the rejection and disapproval of God, all of which is a man-made fantasy, not true at all. It gets the idea that something's wrong with it, that it's fallen, that it's got evil in it. But you see, that's a notion that we need to correct every time it arises. And we have been so indoctrinated with that notion that it takes constant vigilance to keep correcting. Okay, that was a point of view that was presented thousands of years ago And maybe it fit the people back in Atlantis when that was given, or back in Lemuria. But it doesn't fit you today because you have kept unfolding in the truth of being. So within the continuum of time-space, there is an unfoldment, gradually and sequentially. Much like you watch, I think it's interesting to watch an orange, for example. These beautiful little white flowers that have the most exquisite fragrance began to develop a little tiny green bulb in the center of the flower, which eventually becomes the orange. How amazing. And the orange has a really hard rind around it, which is very bitter. And so nothing in nature likes to eat the orange. It's left alone. It's got its little hardened shell of protection. And that's very similar to how the soul, which we've been taught, has the least power here in the material density that we call the earth. And so it takes on that mental scaffolding, if you will, that mental shell that appears bitter. And it does that through self-defense. So even though in highest truth we don't need defense or protection because we are the very embodiments of truth itself, which needs no defense and no protection, we took on the notion that it was kind of scary when we descended our consciousness and came in contact with the material element for the first time and came into contact with the mind stream, which sees everything as different and separate. So it was all in good faith, I suppose, that we created this shell, just like the orange, to protect ourselves. Now, going on with the analogy of the orange, I'll use Ashtar's example, which I think is perfect. He said, everyone discards the outer rind of the orange. On the inside, there's a white membrane. It's full of bioflavonoids. Now, some people like that and they eat it. Other people remove it. But everyone, without exception, enjoys the orange juice. Everyone, without exception. And so you might say that the white membrane is our personality. When we start to awaken, we start to get a little bit of that divine essence percolating down through our physical personality and our ego structure. But when you get down to the juice, that sweet, pure, delicious juice, that's our divine essence. And it's interesting because it's meant that pressure and the things that put the squeeze on us in our life are meant to extract that essence. For example, you crush an olive to get olive oil. You crush a rose to get that wonderful rose oil. And so on. The different things in nature actually are constantly preaching to us about our own divinity. The pressures that are put on us every day that we move about in this chrysalis of being and becoming and time and space and all of the plays of consciousness in the dance of polarity and duality puts the pressure on us, puts the squeeze on us. And as long as we're green and not quite ripe, we react to our circumstances. We get offended, we get hurt, we get angry, we lash out, we point fingers of blame, we run, we hide, we do all sorts of things But when you finally reach that stage, when all of the pressure that's put on you, and as much as life puts the squeeze on you and circumstances, only sweetness emerges. Then you are a ripened fruit on the tree of life. So that's why someone like, for example, our elder brother Jesus, when he was accused and they put the pressure on him to say, "You say you are the king of the Jews. Are you the king?" And he simply said, "You said so. My kingdom is not of this world." Of course, they couldn't understand that. But when someone baited him to his face with outright falsification, falsehood, just trying to bait him, he was silent. He didn't say a word. And so we learn also to be silent when someone is just trying to bait you and use your words against you, which is what the ego-driven do. They will take your own words, rearrange them, and play them back to you in a way that's distorted. And there's no answer to that. There's no answer for that. But staying in your knowing, in quiet composure. And so we learn to listen to the intention behind the words rather than the words themselves. Because words, when they're firmly rooted in being, will always have an expression in the outer personality. That's why you have to watch that the words and the thoughts match the behavior. And then you have truth. So that's our challenge, is to bring everything in alignment with truth. Bear in mind that truth never changes. That's why you can say God is and remain silent, because that is the ultimate truth. Everything else is something the mind has added on. So the mind is what gives this appearance of differentiation in terms of people. We were in an interview with Sai Baba, and Sai Baba was talking about vision, samadrishti, you know, having the equal-minded vision. And he said, there are three kinds of people. He said, the first kind sees everything as evil. Even the good they see as evil. The second kind, and they're the lowest kind. The second kind are the mediocre people who see good as good and evil as evil. And then there's the highest kind, which are very rare. Those that see only the good and the divine. And he said, can you guess how many? Which is the largest number in the world? And we said, well, Baba, probably the second. You know, people who see good as good and evil as evil. And he said, no. Actually, the first category, the lowest one, is the most prevalent on the planet. These are the people that see only evil and see even the good as evil. And I was thinking about that today, and I thought, wow. You know, when you read a lot of the posts and the comments that are on social media, you find that almost every time there's a really positive picture or statement or an idea or something wonderful that's been discovered, 9 times out of 10, people will say, oh, that's a hoax, or that was photoshopped, or oh, that's been around for years. There'll be these naysayers. And there's so much cynicism and putting down of any vestige of inspiration and beauty and hope and loveliness that could be acknowledged. And so you might say it's an infection which has infected our perspective in the Kali Yuga. We're coming out of the Kali Yuga and entering the seventh golden age, but we're still in that overlap. So you see a lot of this kind of disbelief and atheism and agnosticism and putting down of Jesus and putting down of the scriptures and putting down of God. And that's, I would say, is the most prevalent infection that we have to, as light bearers, ward off. We have to constantly educate ourselves to keep our eyes single on the Lord. I just simply don't read or pay attention to stuff like that. I just let it go by. You know, you glance at it, you feel the energy on it, and you let it go. Because to have perfect peace, Jesus gave, or somebody gave in the Bible, this statement, which I have used very much my whole life, you will keep them in perfect peace who keep their mind focused upon you because they trust in you. So we need to put our trust in our divine line of authority and the head of that divine authority, which always goes back to the very source, which is, well, I'll be a little esoteric here, the Great White Lodge on Sirius is the very source of divine administration for this particular creation. And then you have the spiritual hierarchy of men and women, within whose ranks we all stand, regardless of the degree that we have attained in time-space, which is a reflection in time-space of that divine line of authority. Now, that is the great or greater central sun system that we often speak of, and Sirius represents the monad or the I am atmic principle in terms of the universe. Now, as I've said before, the planet Venus represents the soul of the Earth. So you have a divine line of authority in the cosmos as well as in the solar system, as well as in the planetary arrangement. Every single being, whether they're presenting as a sun or a moon or a planet or a human being or a superhuman being or a divine being, all of us have our divine upline and our divine line of authority, which funds our energy field into time-space, through which we do God's work wherever we are. So that's an internal, eternal, and internal connection that we all have. And when you get solid in that knowing, you will never feel disconnected or alone. You will have such a solid line through which you can step forward in confidence. Because when you step forward, we all step forward. We come as one. And you have then the authority to speak from that oneness. But until you know the self, you don't have much authority to speak. It means that that personal self has yet to come into greater alignment with its greater line of being and authority of being. So that's why soul integration and soul infusion is absolutely the first thing that we do. The connection is called the Antahkarana. That's the inner rainbow bridge, as it's sometimes called. But actually, it's the confluence of the principle of the citta, or the thinking aspect, the buddhi, or the intellect aspect, and ahankara, or the self, the personal self, or ego sense of being. So you have those three lines of energy that kind of resonate who you are into your physical body. And that's connected as you meditate and you go in and out of those states of consciousness within yourself. You build that lighted way that then creates a conscious sense of connection and being as you move about in your personal physical life. And that's why meditation is very important. Centering exercises. The exercise I give you each time we start the seminar, which is the simplest of the simple, where you connect consciously with your breath, and you connect it with the intention to connect with your higher self. So simple. And that's why I share it every show, because we make much too much busyness out of connecting when it should be as easy as breathing in and breathing out, which it is. That breath in your lungs was given you, breathed into you by the divine spirit, by the creator, by God Almighty himself, herself, itself, because it's non-gender. So be aware of that, that God lives in you as awakened awareness. That's it. You are, as a divine incarnation, awakened awareness, or as I often say, existence, awareness, and bliss. So, what we want to share with you tonight is that your existence simply quietly present and aware is enough. That's all you've come to present here. Is what you have always been. Your existence, simply, quietly present and aware, is in fact all that you or anyone can give, for it is your unique bestowal, your gift, which is of your authentic essence. And that's what you give back to life, to your creator, to one another. And you know, it's an interesting thing. I think we all recognize when someone is coming from that place, we call it a heart-to-heart communion or connection. Or sometimes being on the same page spiritually. Where you recognize the state of another person because you are in that state yourself. That's why it takes a God-realized person to recognize another as being God-realized. Or it takes an awakened person to recognize another person as being awake. Doesn't mean they're God-realized, just awake. Because God-realization is when every sense of separation and differentiation and difference and otherness is completely lost sight of. Completely. You see yourself as everyone, and you see the world as yourself. That's God realization. That's the state Satya Sai Baba operates out of. So it was fascinating to me to be with him and to move about and watch him as he interacted, because he was in the state that they call nirvikalpa samadhi, that's being in the state of equal mindedness without any otherness interfering, no mind, no ego, no otherness whatsoever. And he literally experiences himself as living inside of each one of us as us. And that was tested again and again and again by various people, where he knew the slightest thought you were thinking before you ever came to see him the first time. Maybe 50 years ago, you were just having an idle thought that went through your mind. And he would come to see him in Prasanthi Nilayam, and he would give you word for word what you were thinking. Or things that you thought and did that you told no one ever at any time. And he explained to us that That was his experience of actually living inside everyone all the time as awareness. He said it's not a psychic power. He's not reading minds. He's not tuning in. He is you, in you, as you. And so he's speaking as the Supreme Divine Spirit, not as a guru or a yogi or a person who has attained this in this lifetime, which he hasn't. He never does any spiritual practice, never has. He came in that way. And so it's very, very helpful to read his teachings, his books. There's many, many, many. You can get them on Amazon. You can get them at the Sati Sai Book Center in Tustin, California. Many things you can read online itself. But to actually read the words of a person who is able to be in full God realization, and also to keep his eyes open, interact with people multidimensionally, every place, at all times, and act normal. It was amazing to be with him. And he would often raise his hand with his palm upturned, and he would wave it in the air, particularly when he would first step out to give us darshan. He would walk around and bless the men's side, and then he would walk around and bless the ladies' side. But he would pause a second and raise his upturned palm and rotate it a few times in the air. I figured he was raising the vibrations, which he probably was. John Roger, who's quite clairvoyant, said that when he saw Baba coming out, that there was like a bee swarm of negative energy and entities that would disappear into his feet. They were just come and, you know, dissolve in his love and his feet. Everything wants to take refuge at the feet of the Lord. Everything wants to go home to love. And he actually saw that. Then very often he would take his forefinger and he would write an om in the air or around people or over people. And people would say, oh, he's rewriting your destiny. I don't know. I never asked him, and he didn't mention anything about it, but I assume he was. We did ask him in our first interview. I didn't ask, but one of the people in our group, of which John Roger was one of them, did ask Sai Baba, wasn't JR, but somebody else, what are you doing, Swami? Are you thinking? Because he would stop every now and then and look like he was distant from his body, and he would be riding in the air. Or he would be, doing that hand movement. Are you thinking, Swami? And Sai Baba said, oh, no, I never think. I'm talking to them. And then he pointed upward. He said, you see, and he gesticulated to each of us in the room. There were about 50 of us in the interview. You see, I'm talking to you. But at the same time, I'm also talking to them, other beings, other worlds. And we just kind of, looked at him. What are you going to say? So that's the destiny of every one of us. You don't become an avatar. You come down as an avatar. You're born an avatar. So technically speaking, an avatar is someone who has come down from a higher divine state of consciousness to serve, upon the earth. And I know we were in an interview, there were about 10 of us, Sai Baba was the 10th. There were 9 of us sitting on a circle on the floor. And he waved to all around us and he said, you are all avatars. And then he held out his hands and he said, but I am a server. He said, you see these hands? These hands never take, they only give. They have the power to give you anything that you want. And I will give you what you say you want until you want what I have come to give you, liberation itself. And I noticed as I was there with Baba that the slightest desire I had, I mean, there'd be silly little things like, oh, I wish I had a piece of chocolate, and, you know, little dumb stuff like that. No sooner would I think a desire, it would be fulfilled almost instantly. Almost instantly. Little silly things that mean nothing, but they would be fulfilled instantly. And that's the way it is, you know. That divine power will give you what you want until you want what it's come to give you. And he said most people come to him for tinsels and trash, for little trinkets, for rings, for, you know, him to materialize different things, or for marriage. They want, you know, the perfect husband or the perfect wife, or they want a child. In India, everybody wants a child. They want a son. You know, we Americans very often want daughters. But, you know, we also come to Baba with a whole laundry list of things we want. You know, a better job, job promotion. When we want to know if it's for, you know, our highest good to buy this house or to move to this particular location. And sometimes we come with physical ailments. We want our ailments to be healed. Or we come because we want more money. We're having a hard time financially. And that's all that tinsel and trash and petty little cures and promotions that Baba said we come to get from him. And we waste the opportunity of getting what he's come to give, which is liberation itself. But we don't really have a concept, particularly those of us here in the West, of what that is. What is it to awaken and realize you're God, that you're the same as Sai Baba, that you and Sai Baba are identical? As he puts it, I am you and you are me. Don't put this artificial separation between us, thinking that I'm God and you're a devotee, or I'm the guru and you're the chela. He said, don't do that. I am you and you are me. I belong to you. You belong to me. We are one and the same. The only difference is that I'm aware I am God and you are not. So our challenge is to awaken to that awareness. And Baba said that anything less than that is a wasting of our incarnation. It's a wasting of our life. He said, you can own the whole world and have all the power in the world, but if you lack devotion to God, your whole life amounts to a zero. And he also has a way of defining devotion. He said, devotion is not crying or any negative state. It is the seeing of all in all that you see. So we're back to that again, that same vision where you see everything as the divine beloved. I love the statement by John Roger. It's my favorite teaching, where he said, if you would know the secret of soul transcendence, look for the good and the divine in all people and things, and leave all the rest to God. Now, if we practice that one thing consistently, we would awaken our awareness fully. Because you don't need to practice all the teachings. You can't. But we need to pick one particular teaching, be it from John Roger or Sai Baba or Maharishi or Yogananda or whoever your divine focus is, Amachi, and practice it consistently all the time. Meditate on it, contemplate it, apply it to your life. I used to write 3x5 cards and stick them up, you know, where I would see them, on my bathroom mirror, refrigerator, wherever. I had little 3x5 cards of Sai Baba's teachings all over the house, you know, at one point in my life back in the early 70s. And I found that even later, when I'd take that little 3x5 card down, when I would walk by that spot of the wall, that message would come to me. even though the wall was blank, that message would play back to me. So this is how you retrain your mind and your thinking. You keep feeding it truth. You keep feeding it that truth that never changes. That truth that cannot be modified. It can't be changed. It's not relative. It's not debatable. Truth simply is forever and ever the same. And that's the solid rock that you base your life upon. You stand on that truth. And if the greatest God incarnation that has walked the earth, probably ever, I don't think we've ever had a greater or more powerful avatar than Satya Sai Baba, we can take his teachings and place them, you know, as the solid rock that we stand on and the stepping stones of which we move through our life. Then you're standing in truth, 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 truth. And your life gets really simple because you just discard everything else. You're like Jesus. You're just silent. You're just quiet. You don't have a lot to say. Because, again, truth doesn't need to be defended. It doesn't need to be explained because unless a person is ready to hear it, they won't and they can't. The ego, as you've noticed, probably, can't tolerate truth, can't understand truth, can't fathom truth, and it will simply say, oh, it's a hoax, it's a lie, he's a counterfeit, he's a fraud, he's a this. You know, that's a typical ego's response to anything uplifting, divine, holy, and true. It's a hoax. So we have to be very wise what we lend ear and attention to. And what we get entrained into and what we accept as a belief. There are scriptures that are 10,000 years old, and they're the Vedas. And they are the only scriptures that did not have a divine, a human or a form that you could point to and say, oh, well, it came from this person or that person. The Vedas were sound. They came in as a divine sound current called a Shruti, came in as Shruti, that which is heard. And they came in, then as they came into the lower mind, they were translated by the consciousness into what's called the Vedic chanting. And it was only after some time that they were actually written down. But they came in initially as sound, which then formed into the Sanskrit, which is called Devanagari, or the language that comes from the god cities, where the gods live. And so that is the root teaching. And Sai Baba said that all of the religions are offshoots or part of the family of the Mother Veda, which is the mother of all spiritual truths and religions and understandings. So it's worth your while to study Sai Baba's books on the Vedas and the Upanishads because you're getting the word from the source that is the Veda Purusha, the very energy of the Vedas that were given as the living word, some say as long, far back as 10,000 years ago. And that's pretty amazing. Sai Baba also materialized during one of the gatherings a Bible, a small Bible, which he said remained, he imported it, he got it from where it's been housed in Russia since 1500 something. And he said in the little Bible there was a complete overview of every world faith as it exists that was originally in the Bible. And there were little you know, streamers, little colored strands in the Bible that separated the different sections that related to Hinduism and Buddhism and Sikhism and Mohammedism and Zoroastrianism. You know, all of the different isms, all the different ways that people have come to God in the major religious traditions. We're in that Bible, and we're, you know, like Baba teaches, they were all from the same divine source. So when we understand that, we begin to lose this tendency to bicker and separate and fight and war over whose God is greater and whose guru is greater and who has the greatest teachings and all of that. And you begin to see, just like the divine line of authority, that we all are in this together, and we all have separate ways of seeing the same thing. I love the story, that very, very classic story that is told about the five blind men encountering an elephant. And one touched the ear and said, oh, the elephant is like a big fan. Another man touched the tail. He said, no, it's like a twig. Another man touched the leg and said, oh, no, it's like a tree stump. Another one touched the side and said, oh, no, the elephant's like a wall. Another one touched the trunk. No, it's like a snake. And so they were each touching a different part of the same elephant, but each was giving an entirely different interpretation of what that elephant was. And likewise, we touch into that one divine source to all different kinds of predilections and ingrained tendencies of consciousness. We're led to a teaching that perfectly is what we need at our stage of development. That's why certain people are born to be Hindus, or born into the Christian faith, or born into Islam, or born into Buddhism, that matches their particular state of consciousness and is the best for them at that time. And sometimes you move on to another faith. But Baba actually encourages you to stay in your given faith and to become a better and cleaner and clearer practitioner of that particular faith. So, there again, when you awaken your awareness, you come to a place in you that you begin to laugh and laugh and laugh, because it's been who you've been all along. It's always been who you've been. You've never been anything but that. It's always been literally under your nose. Everywhere within you, and you know, the old saying is, God looked where, in the one place that he felt that mankind would be the least likely to look, and that was within his own inner self. So God apparently likes this game of hide and seek and enjoys the adventure of your seeking, enjoys the play of romance when the soul falls in love with the beloved. It's part of why God decided to become all of us. God finding himself alone with no one to know his love, decided to become the many so that he could experience his love and he could give his love. And we could have this divine Leela, or this divine play of lover and beloved. The mystical tradition is filled with that romantic imagery. And it's very sweet. And devotion, being love for God, is the fastest and quickest and most efficacious path to adopt during this particular time in history. It's It's something that we can all practice. And having a sense that God is with you wherever you are, God is sitting right in that same place that you are. God is riding in the car, sitting next to you in the car. God is sitting with you at your dinner table. God is walking side by side with you. I remember after I came back from my first trip to Sai Baba in 72, I had such a sense of the presence of Sai Baba with me. Several things happened. Number one, in a packed plane, nobody sat next to me. Why? Because I so strongly felt the presence of Baba sitting next to me in that empty seat that I suppose other people felt it too. Anyway, nobody in that packed plane sat next to me. The other thing, I was walking on the left bank in Paris in the cobblestone street, and I could actually hear his footstep with me. He doesn't wear shoes, unless, of course, at that time he was, who knows. But I actually felt and heard his footfall. I would step and I'd hear him step. I'd step, I'd hear him step. So many experiences like that. And of course, you know, in the many years since, ongoing, constant, I'm never out of his presence, ever, ever, ever. But I had the vision one day back in the 80s of where all of existence was in his head. I saw this ginormous head of Sai Baba, and everything was in his head. Everything, everyone, everything. Los Angeles, where I was living then and I'm still living. Everything was in him. So when it says in the Bible that we live and move and have our being in God, I got it. But one more thing. Sai Baba said an interesting thing about his presence. He said that his physical body included Prashanti Nilayam and a 100-mile radius around Prashanti Nilayam, his ashram in South India. His causal body included the whole of the planet, and his spiritual body included the whole of the universe. So he would be what would be known as a cosmic avatar. You could have a planetary avatar, a systemic avatar, a cosmic avatar, and so on, so on, so on. But that means that we're all inside him all the time. We're always in his presence. We're always with him. And that presence is birthless, deathless, eternal, and knows everything about you because it lives in you as you. So we can imagine that this presence is love. You know, forget the form. If you don't like the form, it doesn't matter. Put any form for God that you prefer, because it's the same love in a different form. But that's just the surface adornment or costume. The love is one and the same. And that love manifests in your life as grace. When you shift out of the law of karma and you ask for this, you ask for grace, you transcend time and space, your past, your history, everything that happened to you in the past, and you're lifted into a new life, of grace. And it's the difference between walking and trudging along and carrying all of your baggage and stumbling and falling and all of that, to getting on the train of devotion. You step on the train, you give your luggage to the porter, you sit down and you enjoy the ride because the train is taking you home. Your only job is to enjoy your trip. Enjoy the passing scenery, and joy with your fellow passengers. But you have no worry. Stay on the train. You're definitely going to reach your destination. The train is the surrender to the Lord, putting your life in the hands of God, surrendering the outcome of the things in your life to the Lord, who knows what's best for you and will never bring anything to you that he will not bring you also through it and equip you to deal with it. But that's part of the pressure and the squeeze that life's events bring into your life to extract that pure ripeness, that sweetness, that wonderful sweet essence, which is your nature. So Sai Baba was constantly giving us ice cream. And he said, I want you all to be like ice cream. I want you to be pure and cool and sweet. So we have to cool our emotions and our passions and our tendencies to lash out and wreak vengeance on each other. And we need to become sweet, because sweetness is the essence of the divine. Sweetness, gentleness, goodness, kindness, self-control, patience, faithfulness, peace, joy, love. All the qualities that it's constitutes the fruit of the Holy Spirit. That's our nature. That's our nature. And to have that final emergence in the ocean of divine love and mercy, we have to become divine love and mercy. How can you merge with the beloved if you have a nature that's different than the beloved's? So a nature that would be different from God's would be the false self. So identify it and dissolve it in God's grace and God's love, and let that pure essence present. Let that be your gift to God. Because of all the things, God owns everything, everything. But God does not own the human heart. That alone must be given of your own free will to the Lord. That is probably the only actual free will we actually have. We can say no for many, many lifetimes, and we get to come back again and again and again and enjoy as much as we want of this playground. But eventually, you get tired of the county fair. You're just kind of nauseated and tired and seen everything, you've been to all the rides, you've seen everything, and you just want to go home. When you get to that stage, you just know that everything that you've ever longed for awaits you in God. And you go to God. You give it all over to God. But you also mature yourself to realize that God is awakened awareness. It's pure being. And that has the greatest power, the greatest influence, the greatest authority on earth. When you awaken that part of yourself, and then your word, like Sai Baba, immediately materializes. It immediately manifests. It has the power, like Sai Baba said, I have the power to change earth into sky and sky into earth. I have the power to do anything. But I rarely interfere with the natural processes of nature. And so we also wield that authority and that ability with great discernment, which is why life really puts the squeeze on us until the only thing that comes out of us is that purity of our divine essence, because that we will never abuse. We will never harm anyone or anything when we have been completely reduced to pure divine love. And then we're much like the bee. The big black bumblebees, I'm sure you've seen them, They make so much noise when they're buzzing around looking for a flower. But then they find the flower and they fall silent because they become fully absorbed in drinking the nectar. And they rest in that bliss. And that's what we're meant to do. We're very noisy when we're still in the ego mind. But when we are fully immersed and absorbed in drinking the divine nectar, then we're silent and we rest in God. And a person in that state has the power to transform earth into sky, and sky into earth, and has literally become one with God. And that's the goal of all of our many existences. Just that. To awaken our awareness that we are the Divine Beloved. So I hope this has been helpful. It's always a great joy to me to be privileged to share these sacred thoughts with you. And I bless each one of you through my divine line of authority. All the 12 lineages that I carry. May you awaken the divine awareness that you are and manifest the purity of your divine love to all life. And let's go out chanting one on IU. Deep breath. Blessings and grace, Adonai.